for a while there, it was about ego and producing and look how important I am. Like, I must be really important because my boss is calling me at 11 p.m. on a Saturday. Doesn't that make me important? Until your mindset shifts on that's what keeps you there.
Welcome to the Quiet Wealth Podcast, where we talk about money mindset, how not to be broke, simple step-by-step strategies to conquer your finances, and the entrepreneurial spirit that will get you there. Your host, Camilla Jeffs, has been a student of money for over 20 years. She started out broke and has built real wealth for her family through steps you can copy. Camilla is on a mission to help thousands of people just like you build true financial stability.
Welcome back to the Quiet Wealth Podcast. I am so excited to welcome another guest on our show who is just a wealth of knowledge and inspiration. But first, if you are new to Quiet Wealth, we're so glad you're here. Welcome. You'll hear at Quiet Wealth, we talk about three things. We talk about how to build wealth with three pillars. So one is investing, how to really get into the game and get going on your investing journey and level up and become a real investor. Number two is building a business. You need a business that goes along with that so you can have the tax advantages and become that amazing CEO and businesswoman that you've been wanting to become. And third, generational wealth. How do we pass this on to the next generation and help set them up for future success? So today I'm welcoming the amazing Kim Hopkins. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Camilla. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to interview you on our show, and we'll post her bio in the show notes. But Kim, give us an overview. Who are you? Did you come from? And how did you get to where you are today?
Sure. So my company is Iron Peak Properties, but it's been a long road. So let's start at the beginning, but we'll make it quick. So I always say, be careful you're not leaning your ladder against the wrong building, because I was really good at that. I started out going to college, not knowing what I wanted to do. I ended up doing math, because I like being creative and solving hard problems, which, you know, looking backwards, those were useful skills to have. And I ended up getting a PhD in mathematics. So a little bit of a different road probably than a lot of listeners. And soon after getting the PhD, I realized I hated academia, to be honest with you. I didn't like the ivory tower. I didn't like working by myself. Even though I'm also a fellow introvert, the joke was, do you know how you know an extroverted mathematician?
No, do tell.
Because they stare at the other person's shoes.
Wow. Okay.
So that's next level for you right there. I wanted to be around people and I wanted to solve business problems. So I ended up going on a huge job search and ended up with a corporate job doing corporate tax credits, worked my way up through operations, ended up in sales, gained a lot of great skills, just fantastic business skills. I always say I got paid to get my MBA, you know, but then I also got some golden handcuffs, and I couldn't leave the job because it paid well, but I was really tired of climbing that corporate ladder. And I just wanted my time to be my own. My whole purpose in life is complete freedom. I'm going to go one step further than financial freedom. I don't want just financial freedom. I want freedom to do what I want, when I want, with the people I love. That is what I want to bring to everyone and listening right now. And so we read The Little Purple Book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I said to my husband, we got to do this. So we made a 5-year plan. It was 2014. The plan alternated babies and properties. So I think it went property, baby, property, property, baby. We ended up with a few less babies than you have, but we do have a nice selection of properties. Not sure which one's more difficult. And we ended up retiring from our jobs at the end of 2018. And now we do the real estate full time, and we specialize in multi-tenant properties that are commercial and not residential. So businesses are our tenants, and we specialize in multi-tenant industrial as well as tiny little neighborhood retail strip centers. And that's what we do. We own about 400,000 square feet, and we have properties all over Oregon, Washington, Utah, Texas, and Arizona.
Awesome. I love this. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you some little more detailed questions. So talk to me about the golden handcuffs. You said that you had the golden handcuffs, and my W-2 job was in HR. So my job was to put those handcuffs on people like you.
She would not leave, right?
Yeah. We were all about retention, and we're like, oh, give them a little more stock, you know, that vests in 5 years, or they have to wait another 5 years and do that every year. So then it's painful, right, for them to leave. But Tell me, how did you get the courage to leave, you know, something that was so lucrative for you at the time?
Yeah, you know, and really quick, a side story, because you mentioned the stock. So my CEO came up to me one day and said I was the only other employee besides himself that was contributing the max amount to the 40 plan that I could possibly contribute. And he gave me a high five. And now you and I laugh at that, right? Like a year later, I was like, turn it off. I don't want to put a dollar into that 401k plan. I want to put it all into real estate. But that's just exactly, you're spot on. That's kind of how they get you, you know? And for a while there, it was about ego and producing and look how important I am. Like, I must be really important because my boss is calling me at 11 p.m. on a Saturday. Doesn't that make me important? Until your mindset shifts on that's what keeps you there. This is important. We need you to work these 8-hour weeks. So it was exciting, you know, until it wasn't. And I have so much empathy, especially for your listeners out there, because I feel like so many women are going through this, you know, where it's like we're told to, you know, lean in and climb that corporate ladder and be in the, you know, executive class suite, you know, and everything like that. And I got the corner office with the big windows, you know, and all those things. And then you're sitting in a 12-hour meeting while you're missing your kid's ballet recital or whatever. And you just, it clicks. Why am I doing this? Who am I trying to impress here? What is life really about? And frankly, I just didn't know that you could have this passive income through real estate or be your own boss. And how that worked. You know, I thought that if you were an entrepreneur, you had to be able to build widgets. And it was like, yeah, you remember, like I was like Sprinkles cupcakes had just come out and they were a huge thing. And I was like, well, I definitely can't do that, you know? And like fashion ate my passion. I have nothing I can build. And so I just didn't know that there was this world out there of real estate where you could have this passive income and then design your own life the way you want it.
That's so funny that you say that because I had the exact same like warped view of being important and being needed. And I think, you know, as women, we are scrambling. We are trying desperately to get ourselves in a position where we're recognized as intelligent, as leaders in the industry, in the corporate world. It's harder and harder. I mean, of course, in HR, we studied all the time, like how many CEOs, percentage of CEOs are women. And it was some abysmal. I forget the percentage, but it was abysmal. It was less than 5%. And so, you know, how do we get women promoted? What do we do? And so we worked really hard to, you know, help promote women and help champion their, what they were doing. But the crazy thing is it puts an extra layer of stress and unneeded, I don't know. It's just really weird how it happens in the corporate world and how we're just trying desperately to get up there that we start to have this warped view of, hey, you know, someone's texting me all the time. I'm important. And that means I've made it, you know?
Yep.
And then we kind of hit that point where we're like, wait a minute. This is not fulfilling me and my life. And meanwhile, I'm missing out on these really important things that are happening with, you know, my children or family or just life in general. Like it's just passing me by because I'm so important in my job. So fascinating because when I was getting ready to leave my corporate job, I also was looking at entrepreneurship and I was like trying to come up with ideas. I was literally like throwing out things and like, well, what can I build? You know, like all the things say to build something and have a product. And I was like, I kind of hate stuff. I don't really buy stuff. I don't know anything about like beauty products. I don't know anything about, you know, fashion. I don't know anything about all this. And I was like, what do I know a lot about? I'm like, oh, I know a lot about real estate. Okay. So now real estate as a business. So let's transition into that a little bit is because the second pillar in Quiet Wealth is we're teaching women how to build businesses and how to really like make this a business. It's not just you go out and buy a rental property and all right, you got a rental property that maybe someday will be worth $1 million, right? No, we want you to go out and build an actual business around this. So how did you go about doing that?
Yes. So first of all, I totally agree with what you just said, you know, and in addition to building a business, I like to say we are rebuilding the family business because, you know, especially as women, it's not just a business, it's life. And I really believe there is no work-life balance when you actually have everything you want. It's actually a good thing not to have work-life balance. It flows both directions. But part of that is I've always started from the very beginning as treating our family as a business. And so we don't just look at the income and expense of our real estate. We look at the profit that comes from the real estate after the income and expense, and that flows into the family business. And in the family business, now we have all our personal expenses. And how much profit do we generate as a family? And what investments are we making as a family? And so what we did from the very beginning is we made a table. We wanted to retire in 5 years from our day jobs. And we started with, okay, how much income are these nice golden handcuff jobs producing? How much is the smallest we can spend on expenses? What is our family profit? And now we take that family profit and we are going to buy a property with everything that's left. And the first property, let's just keep it simple. Know your numbers, but keep it simple. Let's just say the first property makes a 7% return on investment, you know? So now let's filter that into the next year. Now we've got our W-2 income again, but we've got this extra, whatever it is, $10,000, $20,000, you know? And now do it again. And how far do you have to take that to be able to replace your expenses with your real estate income? Because you don't have to replace your W-2, right? You really just have to replace your expenses. Now you're free. Now you can focus on the real estate and grow it back up to where you were before or much higher for that matter. So that's what we did is we started with books, obviously, to educate ourselves on the subject matter. And we treated it like a family business from the beginning. And we still do that today.
Oh, okay. I hope you were listening because Kim just literally gave you a step-by-step plan to retire from your job in 5 years. She mapped it out. Our PhD in math, she just like mapped it all out for you. It's just numbers, people. It's not actually that hard. And I think sometimes we overcomplicate it and we get swirled up in our emotions around it. And I know when I left my corporate job, I was really worried about the be needed factor. Did you worry about that at all? Like when you left that you would worry that now nobody is going to call you and actually need you to solve their problem?
Well, for me, I actually left on maternity leave. And I was in a sales job and my CEO said he knew that I was quitting because I gave away a lead on maternity leave to someone else. So that's how much the golden handcuffs impact, right? Is that his expectation was that I'd still be selling while I had a 4-week-old, right? Yeah. But I gave it away so he knew. So I was immediately needed by someone else. A very small
nice.
Someone.
I like that. Yes.
So yeah, I didn't worry so much about being needed. I did like, you know, want to make sure that I continue to build a community, but so that you're not just working with your husband or by yourself all the time. I think it is important to have a partner if you don't have a partner to bounce ideas off of. But then in terms of the community, oh my gosh, the real estate community is just abundant. There's been no problem there, you know, to be able to hang out with the people that you love, as opposed to all those hours I wasted at the water cooler talking to people that take it or leave it, mostly leave it, you know, it's just, yeah.
That's so funny. So let's talk about your investment of choice, because I'm excited that you're the first one on my podcast who is going into this multi-tenant industrial type of investment. So first, explain to somebody who has no idea what that means, what it is, and then tell us why you decided to go down that route instead of just doing like single family homes, for example, or multifamily, which is a pretty common way to go about investing.
Sure. So there's two kind of product types. Let's talk about them both. So multi-tenant industrial, you've seen these everywhere and you just haven't noticed them. Picture a big warehouse. And just like multifamily, it's broken up into multiple units. Everyone has an overhead door, small office, small bathroom. 80% of the space is a warehouse. So anyone who's selling something on Amazon, general contractors, any type of like craft, like sign makers, painters, and then there's some crossover to a more retail use, like driving schools, dog grooming. It's a new business idea for you right there.
There you go.
Stick with real estate, Kim. Dog grooming, basketball camps, CrossFit gyms. It's a cult you should join. Sorry, I have to work that into.
Awesome.
And so it's a very versatile product type. So that's one property that type that we do. And then the other type is neighborhood retail. And so this is your, again, mom and pop. We want to work with small businesses, you know? So picture mom and pop businesses, small retail centers, not anchored by anything. So an anchor, for example, is if you have a big shopping center and there's a Petco in the middle or a Walmart, you know, you're anchored by this big, big corporate tenant to draw people in. We actually don't want that because they're usually safe. However, in COVID, we saw, for example, that a lot of these big corporations went under and they're hard to deal with and their returns aren't as good. So it's not anchored by anything. It's your CPA, your florist, things like that. And then the reason we went into these fields was really a process of elimination. So we didn't want to do anything that was single tenant, because if the tenant is vacant, if the property is vacant, you're completely underwater on your mortgage, as you know. So we didn't want to do single tenant because of the risk diversification. So single family homes were out. We didn't want to do multifamily because we wanted businesses as tenants. We always had a love for businesses, you know, ever since we swore off academia. We loved helping businesses. And so we wanted businesses as a tenant. And we also didn't want to fix toilets in the middle of the night, honestly, you know, or things. Yes, I know now that's completely outsourced. But when you're getting started, that was something we wanted to avoid. And the business tenants are much more self-efficient. They're also much easier to deal with from, you know, a covenants perspective, because, for example, if a residential tenant doesn't pay rent, there's often several steps you have to go through. It's more cumbersome. You don't want to lock someone out of their home. That must feel terrible to if you have to do that, you know. But with a business, it's slightly different. If someone doesn't pay their rent, and you've gone through as much as you can, that's it. You're locking the doors. Next one, you know? And then we didn't want to do office because it involves so much tenant improvement. Like every new tenant wants drop ceilings, wants the walls moved, and that's a lot of opportunity cost. That property is going to be vacant and costs a lot of money to do that. So that's how we ended up with these two asset classes.
Wow. I love that. Okay. So super cool. You're inspiring me to look at them a little bit more too.
Like, yeah, we should do a deal together.
Maybe let's do a deal together. That would be amazing. So these are really interesting. And actually, during my MBA, I was in the commercial real estate club. That's what it was, the club.
Oh, cool.
And we actually evaluated one of these multi-tenant, and like we like went and we did a whole presentation on it. And it was a really cool thing that we did. Okay, so talk to me about how did you even get started doing those? Because they're not like, you know, they're not small deals. Right? These are kind of big deals. Or where did you find really small ones? How did you get started? And tell me about your first one.
Sure. So we were living in California at the time in Los Angeles, but I'm originally from Portland, Oregon. And so I had some connections there. So we started looking there and we ended up looking at Vancouver, Washington, which made people, not the cool Vancouver, Washington. It's beautiful, but a lot of people haven't heard of it, you know, and it's just across the river from Portland. And it has some great advantages because it's less expensive to live there and there's no income tax. So a lot of people work there, but there's no sales tax in Oregon. So there's a lot of crossover. And the reason I explain all that detail is because since then, that's something we really look for, is these kind of tertiary markets that are really strong and clearly a win, but they're not hip and cool quite yet, you know? And so we started looking there, and the first property we found first deal we did was close to $3 million. It was about 2.7, I believe. And for that one, we raised money from family and they did 30% of it. They did a third and we did the rest, because since we had gone to grad school, we were pros at living below your means. I mean,
nice.
DiGiorno, if anyone remembers the good old frozen pizza days, you know, like that was a staple. So we were good at living below our means. We both had jobs. We didn't have kids at the time. So we had a good amount of savings. And so our family put in 33%. But back then, we didn't know anything about syndication. So it was just straight partnership, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that we found that first deal because we were so analytical. My husband, by the way, is a PhD in microbiology. So there's a lot of analysis going on in the household. And we were so analytical that we frankly drove the brokers insane. 3-page emails with questions, follow-up questions. Here's my follow-up questions in blue. Here's my follow-up questions in purple, cyan. You get the idea. But they put up with us because we were from there and, you know, we had got these people through connections. And so that was the first deal we did. And I think it's about 20 tenants and we still have it today. We're buy and hold investors. We bought it in 2014. I believe, and it's cash flowing around 15% now. So it's been a great
awesome
investment. It was a great time to buy too, to be fair. The market does, I always say there's no bad markets, only bad deals, but it was a great time to buy.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you can benefit from the buying when it's going to be the upswing and you're like, okay, awesome. I did it. And then when there's a downswing, right? Like, true. Like, you can still get good deals in the downswing and in the market. So what are you doing today? I mean, we're having this conversation March of 2023, and there's looming inflation, like interest rates are going up like crazy. There's like, everybody's throwing the R word around, recession. So what are you doing? Are you still buying? Are you waiting? What's your outlook?
Yeah, we're still buying. So we just closed on a property at the end of last year in Sedona, Arizona, and we got that one with seller financing, 0% interest. So to your point that you just made, you just change how the deal works, right? It's bad marketing how the deal works, because everyone, my thing is always like, what problem are we solving here? And in this case, the owner was 80 years old. He was a retired heart surgeon. He had lived in Sedona for 20 years. He moved to Florida for a girlfriend, more power to him, and he had to sell his Sedona property. So he wanted someone who was going to be easy, you know, husband and wife team show up like, we're easy. We're going to be so easy. Now, at the end, they did say we weren't quite as easy as we had led on to be. But, you know, potato, I'm going to do my due diligence. So we found this property off market. We were able to negotiate seller financing. And people probably have, your listeners have probably heard that term a lot lately, creative financing. But until you actually look at the numbers, you might not realize how impactful something like that is. I mean, this took a deal that doubles your cash flow, at least if you can get a low interest rate with seller financing. So it turned the deal from a meh to a, you know, heck yeah. So we did that deal and now we're on the hunt for more. So yeah, we're looking.
Talk to me more about seller financing, because I think everybody knows it's a good idea, right? It's a really great deal for the buyer. Always, as a buyer, we always want to find seller financing. But I think most sellers don't set out to sell their property and finance it too. So how did that work out for you? And what are the benefits, I guess, for a seller to actually do seller financing?
Yeah, so you do have to find a seller with the right story. If your seller is some big investment company and they're planning to 1031, which means to take the profits and buy another property with it, they're not going to play with you most likely, you know? But it depends, because even an investment firm right now, maybe they need to sell. You know, so it depends for this seller. So in this type of situation, the real thing is they're going to have a big capital gains tax if they sell the property the traditional way. The 1031 exchange, which again is where you sell a property and you invest it in a new property so you don't have to pay tax, is an incredible wealth building strategy. It's one of the things that has really accelerated us, is being able to sell one property and use it to buy another with nothing else down. But if you're older, if you're looking to take some chips off the table and you don't want to do that, you're going to have a huge tax liability. So the first thing that seller financing does is it breaks out that tax liability and spreads it out over several years. It also gives them, let's say they're 80 years old and they want to send some passive income down to their children. It gives them a passive income stream that they can then pass to their children. And then on a simple level, some people have to sell. If you have to sell and your deal doesn't make sense at the price you're asking and you want to hit that price, as a buyer, I'm able to raise my price to meet what you want, the seller financing. So in this case, for example, they were asking a price up here. We offered something way down, you know, much less than what they were asking. They said, how about we split the difference? And I said to them, I can't split the difference. I read a book called Never Split the Difference. I didn't say that. I thought, I can't split the difference. What kind of negotiator would I be if I split the difference? So that's when we came back to them. And we said, okay, how about we do seller financing and then we'll hit your number. So I always believe if you're going to approach someone with seller financing, there's a couple of philosophies on this. You can either give them options, like here's what our price would be without seller financing. Here's what our price would be with seller financing. But I don't really like that, because I feel like options create confusion. And I just wanted to make it easy for them to say yes, you know? And so I start with maybe a lowball offer without seller financing. And then when they push back on that price, now it's like, all right, I'll give you that price, but I want the seller financing to go with it.
Yeah, I met a guy the other day, and that's all he does. He buys like small multis, seller finance, 0% interest, and he doesn't care about price. He's like, price, not a big deal. Because literally, he's paying off those properties in 10 years or less. And by doing seller financing, 0% interest. And so if the seller really wants a higher price, he gives it to him. He's like, sure. You know, I mean, he's not going to like give away everything, but he doesn't, the price is not as important of a negotiating factor as a lot of these other, as the terms could be. And that was really interesting and eye-opening to me, is that because we always get hung up on price. Like, well, I'm not going to pay that much for the property, but maybe it makes sense to pay that much because you're getting 0% financing, right? And so it's like totally okay. So
yeah, and I do like, yeah, and I actually, I don't know if she wants me to say her name on a podcast. I won't say her name, but I have to give credit. I got the idea from a girl. She was all of 28 years old. I met her at a real estate party that night that we were negotiating the deal in Phoenix. And she was like, just do 0%. And I'm like, what do you mean 0%? That's banana pants. And she said, no, just offer zero. And I thought about it. And I was like, that's actually a really good idea. Because if you come in with an offer at a 2% interest rate, and the market is 6% right now, we're comparing two things. We're comparing a 2 to a 6. Wow, you seem really far off, you know? But if you come in with a 0% offer interest rate, you're really taking that chip off the table. You're just taking that component off the table. You're saying, okay, this is a different product. This is a product to help you get your price tag. Interest is not even part of the discussion. It's more of an NA rather than a number we're discussing. Right. I do want to give a caveat. Everyone should talk to their CPA if they try to do a 0% interest, because there is like a, I can't remember the word, but you do have to charge some interest rate. However, if you do the math on your particular deal, it may be the case that it's de minimis at the end of the day. It's complicated. It's beyond the scope of the podcast, but I just want them to know that there is a solution out there. If they're listening to this and they're saying, wait, you can't do that, there are ways.
Yep. And how long of a term did you give the seller?
So it's a 5-year term, but we added a 3-year extension. And I think we offered something like, for each year that we extend, we pay an extra $500 a month or something like that.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Awesome. So, super cool. Congrats on that deal, by the way. That's a fun one. And Sedona, Arizona. If you've never been to Sedona, to our listener, got to check it out. It's a cool place. A lot of people have a lot of healing, you know, that happens in Sedona. There's a lot of meditation happening in Sedona. And so if you need a place to go and get in tune with nature, it's a great area for sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Beautiful.
So talk to me now. Let's transition a little bit to our third pillar, which is generational wealth. So I know you have 2 kids. They're ages 4 and 6. So they're quite young in terms of like all the education. But first, tell me, what's your philosophy on generational wealth? And then second, what are your plans for teaching your kids, and how are you going to, you know, make sure they get the education they need to become successful, just like you and your husband are?
Okay, so quick, real quick tangent. So usually we buy industrial properties, and we have pictures of our kids in front of these industrial buildings looking bored as poop. So it's pretty funny. But this last property we bought in Sedona had a smoothie shop. So they are like really digging the neighborhood retail.
Yes.
So, you know, our philosophy on this, we're in the early stages. I tried to get them to do some work like paper shredding. They're kind of useless. But our philosophy is really to instill a love for learning from a very young age and a love for that entrepreneurship, you know, and also like we would love for them not to have jobs. Like we would love for them to be entrepreneurs from the beginning. I honestly don't know, Camilla, if you have to experience it to know you don't want it. Like, I don't know if you have to have that corporate job to really like, you're probably the same as me. I am unemployable. Mark my words, you know? This podcast can be saved for 100 years. I will never work for someone again. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you can get that taste in your mouth unless you've tasted it, but ideally that's what we want. So to answer your question, we are just constantly talking to them all the time about, you know, how mommy just picked you up at 2 o'clock to randomly take you to the zoo because there was an exhibit you wanted to see. Do you know why I can do that? You know, because we work for ourselves. All these things that we are so lucky, and truly, I feel so blessed and grateful to be able to do with our time with the children. You know how we take a week off in the middle of the year and go to Florida just because we feel like it? Like that's because mommy and daddy work for ourselves. You know, we don't work for someone else. So try to instill that from a young age, along with the love for learning. They do, I know it sounds silly, but I think it's really important. They do a ton of like lemonade stands and selling all sorts of stuff. You know, I do have to admit my kids are constantly failing the marshmallow test. I always tell them when they have $1 to spend at Target, I'm like, if you just wait 2 weeks, you could get something that's not a piece of crap. And they always buy the crap. So we're working on that, you know, But in terms of generational wealth, that's where we're starting right now. I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit more about how you thought about it so far, because you probably thought about it a lot more than I have.
I do. I think about it a lot. And that's because my kids are, you know, late, our teenage years, and have one. My oldest is 20. So she's in college right now. And we've had those discussions with her. She's questioning right now. So she's in college. She's getting her degree in computer science, which is an excellent degree, right? She's going to come out of college and be able to make $100,000 right away. And that's great. And so, and she's already mapped out a whole plan for herself. Like, essentially, she's said, okay, I've got 5 years. I'll work in corporate for 5 years. I'll live off of like $20,000 a year. I'll invest the other 80 and then I can be done. So she's mapped it out. We have the whole spreadsheet. And so it's really interesting. But now she's very entrepreneurial. She loves, you know, she gets passionate about things and wants to pursue them. And so here's what she's doing right now is she loves plants. Okay. So she's looking at a way to combine her love for plants with her technology focus and work on, regenerating farms. Okay, so regenerative farms, that's what it is. I was going to say generational, but I'm like, no, that's not right. Regenerative farms, which means like, though she goes to school in Hawaii, hard life, I know. And she's like, but on those islands that are built by volcanoes, then the soil cannot grow its own vegetables. So those islands are fully reliant on imports for fresh food. So therefore, they have a lot of problems. They have a lot of health problems with the people who live on island. And it's super expensive to bring in fresh food. And so they're trying to figure out ways that they can develop the soil in order to grow their own food. So she's like, Mom, this is so cool. So she's telling me the other day, like, I could go work in Italy on this regenerative farm. And I'm like, okay, well, what about your computer science degree? And she's like, oh, well, there's things I can do there because they, in order to test the farm, they have these testers and the testing process is really long and arduous. And so she could develop some kind of technology that could make it really fast. And then she can get into carbon credits and start and help farms be able to sell carbon credits, because right now it's really hard. So all these big businesses want to buy the carbon credits so they can pretend like they are carbon neutral. And farms want to sell because the farmers are struggling in lots of areas. And so that's what she's doing. But she's just got so much entrepreneurship in her brain that I would be surprised if she actually goes into a job. And then our other kids, you know, we're always talking to them about entrepreneurship. I mean, they know Mom left her job, her corporate job, like 2 years ago. And I'm here to greet them at the door with wide open arms. I like pretend like I'm a puppy when my kids get home.
Gosh, I'm so excited to see you.
And they love it. You know, and sometimes they'll walk in and I'm like on a podcast like this and they're like, oh, they're at the door with their little frowny faces. Like, Mom, where's my hug? You know, but at least I'm here, you know, and they know I can be to every tennis tournament. I can be to all their theater things. I can be to their volleyball tournaments, because I work for myself. And so my kids are just fully surrounded with it. They're with me. They go with me. They flip houses with us as a family. And I love that you are really intentional about family business. And I think if you just keep that focus about building the family business and the kids get involved, you open up their books and now they can see what's going on. A lot of parents get queasy about saying, you know, telling their kids how much money they make or whatever. But I think if the kid asks the questions, they deserve an actual answer. And it doesn't have to be something you're hiding or you're feeling comfortable with. You just answer the question and just let them know. Yeah, we do make a lot of money, right? We do bring in a lot of money because we do this and this and this, AO. And if you want to bring in money like that, you can do all these things too. Totally believe in you. So there's a lot to unpack there. And I actually have a course called Gen Wealth. If you or any of the listeners want to pick that up. It goes into every age. Like, here's what you need to teach at every age. Here's the mindset issues. Here's the, you know, the actual financial tactics. Here's how to teach entrepreneurship. Here's how to get your kids going in that and teach them a different way to do
it. Yeah, I'm signing up for that. I'm sold. So just to go back to what you said at the beginning, first of all, I just want to say your daughter sounds amazing. So bravo. And I'm kind of envious of both the computer science and the Hawaii gig. So loving that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then just to what you said, yeah, I love the idea of bringing them into the family business. And then conversely, one of my dreams is to be able to go on the same adventure with them. So let's say that they want to sell something. You know, let's say they do want to invent a product, unlike, you know, they have some skill set that neither you nor I have, but they want to sell some product on Amazon. You know, I want to be able to be like, let's do this. Like, let's go mm-hmm. sell this, you know, together and pursue those dreams together. So I love all
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, it's super cool what you can do. And I list love. I spoke at a retreat last weekend to a group of women, and we had a whole big conversation around this. And it's a big, it's a hot topic for us who are like really pursuing our own financial, you know, wealth and all that we're doing. And we're trying to bring our kids along because, you know, we came from nothing. And so we're like, well, how do you teach the next generation without just giving them everything? And that's one of the things that is puzzling sometimes for us as you know, first gen entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I have to admit, I'm puzzled, but I feel like if I sign up for your course, I'm going to get all the answers. So I'm set.
Well, not all the answers. I'm not I don't know everything, but I can teach you what I have done with my family. And in fact, there's a bunch of podcast episodes I did on it too. And so for you or the listener, you can go back and listen to those, because I spilled the beans on a lot of the things that we've done before with our kids to get them going. But Kim, fantastic. Thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I just wanted to, if you had advice for someone who is around our same age in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and okay, we're ready to get going. And what would your like concrete advice be? What are the next steps for somebody?
My concrete advice is actually going to be a little woo-woo. So my advice is to start with the end in mind. And let me say what I mean by that. So take a day, go to the forest, go to the spa, go somewhere where you do not have your phone on your person and there are no little people or big people interrupting you. Take a day, take a journal and write out your perfect day, you know, and get into the detail. What time do you wake up in the morning? Do you use an alarm? Do you wake up naturally? What do you do in the morning? Are the kids up? Are you up first? Are you going to exercise? When do you actually want to exercise? Like, to all those women out there, I have close friends who I empathize. You know, they're getting up at the crack of dawn. They're driving an hour to work. They're working from 9 to 6, you know, like, scratch all that. Take a step back and write out your perfect day from beginning to end, you know? And also while you're doing that, think about what your unique ability is. What are you good at and what do you love doing? And write that all out and now work into that, you know, because you might find at the end of the day, entrepreneurship, that perfect day really varies for an entrepreneur. You know, Jeff Bezos isn't going to the spa in the middle of the day and he's probably not going to the soccer games, you know, so it really varies and you can. If you're not careful, you could build another job for yourself as an entrepreneur, you know? And so start with that end in mind. And you might find at the end of the day that you really do want to be a passive investor instead, because what's going to make you happy isn't what you choose, what asset class you choose. You know, what's going to make you happy is when you hit that perfect day. So that would be my advice to the listeners.
Oh, so
and I wish them the best of luck.
I remember telling a friend of mine, so I used to be the 4 a.m. get upper and exercise like super early in the morning and then you know, go about my day. And I remember telling someone like, I feel like I will have made it when I can exercise at 9 a.m. And then I hit that and I exercised at 9 a.m. And I was like, I am so grateful for this opportunity to exercise at 9 in the morning, right? And it's not like I slept in till 8:45, right? Like I still up and got the kids out of bed and made all the lunches for the 7 children that needed lunches, you know, like and did all the things. But then I didn't have to get up at 4 a.m. anymore and have some kind of crazy schedule and crazy life, you know. I mean, life is a little bit crazy, let's be honest, but it's fun crazy right now instead of mad crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're choosing what you do, you know? And like for me, I'm up as well, but I don't want to be shaken in the morning. It's my time to think, you know? But like I wrote in my perfect day, I only wear exercise clothes. I don't know. I got a thing against jeans. I can't wear pants. So it's like snippet for YouTube. Kim can't wear pants, you know? But that was literally in my vision statement and I'm wearing my gym clothes right now. And it's like part of your perfect day. The little things matter. Yeah. The only thing we have is the present.
That is such great advice. Kim, thank you again. How can our listener get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, which is ironpeakproperties.com, and sign up for our newsletter. And then if they could follow me on Instagram, that would be great. You can find me at Money Plus Happy. That's money and then the word P-L-U-S, happy, all one word, on Instagram.
Perfect. All right. Well, please go follow, connect with my dear friend, Kim. She is just a wealth of information and knowledge and very inspiring. Like, she and I are going to, we're going to be friends for a long time. I can tell. So thanks so much for joining us here at Quiet Wealth. And please, you need to share this with a friend of yours. We need to share the education so we can share the wealth. Bye for now.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Quiet Wealth Podcast. If you want more, head on over to CamillaJeffs.com/podcast to get the show notes and dive into other juicy episodes. While you're there, be sure to grab the free guide to building wealth. And if you know a friend who is struggling with money, please send this episode to them. Let's share the wealth in as many ways as we can. Until next time, wishing you much success.